Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to today's webinar. This is Ashley Marcel, and I'm joined today by my colleagues Karen Pace and Karen Johnson, who will be assisting me with today's webinar. So on our agenda for today, I'm going to give you guys a brief update on some changes that we've made to our taxonomy, and then we'll have a presentation from Karen Pace and Karen Johnson that covers composite measures and an update on the patient-reported outcomes project. So regarding our taxonomy, we've made some edits to some of the taxonomy elements. The first is that the elements population health and infrastructure support have been removed from the cross-cutting area node. Adult and elderly care has been removed from the target population node, and patient engagement and experience is no longer an option for a measure type. And just to give you guys a little background on why these changes were made, regarding population health, we have a sub-element entitled Populations at Risk, which is under our cross-cutting area. So we felt it was duplicative to have it in two different areas. Regarding infrastructure support, we removed that from our list of review committees, so it kind of didn't make sense to have it still listed as a cross-cutting area. Adult / elderly care was removed from target population. However, it was replaced by senior care. And the logic behind that was that we felt that adult / elderly care was too broadly defined to be useful as classifying categories. And lastly, patient engagement and experience is no longer an option for a measure type. We do still have it for one of our review committees, but we did remove it from our measure type options. Regarding the maintenance review committees, we've removed the population health / prevention committee and the healthcare infrastructure committee from the 21 topic areas. So that brings us down to 19. The measures that were assigned to those committees have been reassigned, and the measure developers that were affected by this change have been sent their updated maintenance schedules. We also renamed the functional status committee to health and functional status. So we're going to stop there and take any questions that you guys may have regarding these changes. Operator, if you can open the line for questions at this time.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask an audio question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just one moment to compile the Q&A roster. Please hold for your first question. Your first question comes from the line of Stephanie Steinberg.
Okay.
Yes, will you be providing these slides to us? I mean, you're going very, very quickly, so, you know, it's kind of hard to keep up.
Yes, we will provide a copy of the slides after the webinar.
Please hold for your next question. Your next question comes from the line of Patrick Romano.
Hello.
Hi, Patrick.
Hello, Ashley. So two quick questions. One is, what is the alternative for patient experience or engagement? I presume there's some alternative option now available in the taxonomy. And the second question is, with the elimination of the Population Health Committee, will there be some effort or attention to ensure that the other committees to which those measures are assigned have expertise in the area of population health?
Yes, so I'll start with your second question first. We will ensure that the measures that the committee members that those measures have been reassigned to do have some expertise in preventative and population health level of measurement. Regarding your first question, at this time we haven't come up with an alternative to the patient engagement and experience option for measure type. That is something that we're considering, but unfortunately right now we haven't arrived at anything concrete.
So then why was it eliminated?
We have the Patient Experience and Engagement Review Committee, and after, you know, several discussions with senior leadership here, we felt that patient experience and engagement really didn't fit within the realm of our taxonomy and the changes that we made as a measure type.
Okay.
Your next question comes from the line of Rebecca Baranowski.
Hi, Ashley, this is actually Sharon Hybe with ABIM.
Okay.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm fine.
Okay. I just had a question about the adult/elderly care change to senior care.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't have the whole taxonomy here in front of me. So are there separate areas for adult care and then another one for elderly care? Recognizing, of course, adult/elderly really includes populations for patients from 18 and up. So I understand, makes total sense that you would break them out. I just wonder if adult care is also it represented there, and if not, is it assumed that it would just be moved forward toward the condition or the other projects that that might be managed?
It's what you said in the latter part of your statement. We haven't called out adult care explicitly. It is assumed that, you know, those measures that the population, for which the population are adults, they'll be covered in either the care settings or the cross-cutting areas. So we haven't called out adult care explicitly.
And may I ask a follow-up question to Patrick's question on the patient engagement, patient engagement question?
Sure.
So would that same methodology be used for the patient engagement measures or the patient experience measures, which are we would take those measures and utilize patient engagement type measures, again, in the cross-cutting condition setting projects similar to the way we would be doing with the adult care?
That is correct.
All right, very good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You have no further questions at this time.
Okay, at this time, I'm going to turn the presentation over to Dr. Karen Pace, and she's going to give you guys an update on our composite measure evaluation guidance project.
Good afternoon. Is Karen Johnson on the line? She was going to start. If not, I'll go ahead and get started.
She actually just, here she is.
Sorry. I had to get my glasses so I could see the screen. Hi, this is Karen Johnson. We wanted to give you just a little bit of an update on our composite project that we've been working on for the past, I don't know, 4 or 5 months now. Go ahead, move over. The purpose of the project was to review and update our guidance for evaluating composite performance measures. And just quick background, the original criteria that we have to look at composite measures were developed in 2008. So since that time, we have actually updated our criteria and guidance for evidence and for testing and for usability. So we needed to revisit our criteria and guidance for composites to make sure that they are aligned with our updated criteria for the other for evidence and testing and usability. So you can follow along on from our webpage, and we have the link there. So this is just a list of the TET members who have been working with us, and you can see that we have a really a stellar panel there. We have several folks who were on the previous composite TEP, so they brought some of their thinking and understanding of the process itself, plus the thinking that we had for the original composite guidance and criteria. But we also have on there, as you probably know, we have several of the developers of composite measures, and several of the really stellar methodologists. So we're very pleased and happy with the TEP members. So again, just to show you the project activities and timeline, we got started back in October, really a little bit before that, identifying our TEP members, but we had our in-person meeting in November. Very quickly after that, a post-conference or post-meeting call. And then we put our report out for comment right after Thanksgiving. So that was a 30-day comment period, and then we brought the test back together again in January, early January, to adjudicate those comments. And actually, in between there, we have brought our progress to date to the CSAC, so we've actually done that a couple times now. So going forward, we have one more call with our tech, actually this coming Thursday, to finalize the criteria and the report. And then we will be taking that report and the recommendations to the CSAC in March, and then hopefully board ratification in early April. So, again, our draft report and comments, we put it out in at the end of November. And in that draft report, we had a little bit of a change in the definition of a composite measure, but that was on the table. You know, what is the definition of a composite measure? The TEP articulated some guiding principles to help them think about how they would want to do and create criteria and guidance. And then they actually did develop two composite-specific criteria for evaluation, and those, at least at that time, were must-pass criteria. And then along with those criteria, we were able to get guidance for all the criteria as they can pertain to composites. So, for example, for the impact criteria under importance to measure and report, we have guidance about what that means for a composite measure. So, all in all, we had 43 comments from 5 member organizations and the public. And given that that was right around the Thanksgiving, Christmas holidays, we thought that was a lot of engagement from our audience. And Karen, I think I was going to turn this over to you now if you're ready to take this one.
Okay, thank you. So, and certainly we'll give you a few comments here, but as Karen said, the TEP is going to meet again on Thursday to finalize some things. So I'm going to give you some highlights, and I know Patrick Romano, one of our co-chairs, is on this call as well, so he may want to add some comments, and then we'll take any questions or comments from the audience. But basically, the TEP did revisit the definition. It's essentially the same with a little clarification that we're talking about composite performance measures, but basically the key points are that it's a combination of two or more component measures into a single measure with a single score. One of the things that the TEP is grappling with is being more explicit, excuse me, about the types of measures that should or should not be classified as composite performance measures for purposes of NQF measure submission, evaluation, and endorsement, because that does lead to some additional information that we would want from the measure developer for the steering committees to review and evaluate. So we really want to be more clear about this. There's not clear black and white lines, and so some decisions are going to be made, but in the effort of having some consistency, we're going to try to be more specific about that. And that is directly in response to some of the comments we received to provide more guidance in that realm. The other probably big thing that the TEP recommended that is different from the prior guidance is that the component measures do not need to be individually endorsed or even individually meet all of the criteria for endorsement. So that the guidance talks about which sub-criteria the component measures need to meet, for example, evidence and performance gap. However, you know, it's really up to the developer whether they want to, whether they're using a NQF-endorsed a performance measure, or whether they want the component measure to be individually endorsed. So So we'll be making some clarifications that endorsement applies to the composite as a whole, not the components, unless they would be individually submitted, evaluated, and endorsed. Okay, next slide. As Karen Johnson mentioned, the TEF also provided some guidance for the other criteria as they apply to composite measures. And one of the key principles that they worked under is that basically the NQF evaluation criteria apply to composite measures just as they do to any performance measure. And what we focused on is how to apply those criteria and then if there were any additional requirements for composite measures. So basically for reliability and validity testing, that this should be conducted for the composite as a whole at the level of the composite score. You probably recall that NQF's criteria for reliability and validity testing is that it can be conducted at the level of the data elements or the performance score. But in the case of composites, the TEP thought the focus really should be on the composite as a whole at the level of the composite score. The composite-specific criteria are pretty similar to what was in the initial composite criteria, but they were reorganized into two composite-specific criteria and provided some more detail. Under importance to measure and report, there's a composite-specific criterion that has some requirements for describing the composite, and basically to include information about the quality construct, the rationale, and how the construction of the composite really fits whatever is intended for the quality construct and rationale. And then the other composite-specific criterion is under scientific acceptability of measure properties, and will outline expectations for any empirical analyses to support the composite measure construction. Next slide. So we thought it that we didn't want to get into any more of the specific details because, as we said, we have this follow-up call with the TEP on Thursday, and so it's a little premature to give you more definitive statements than where we're at right now, but the call is open, and so anyone is welcome to join in. And as Karen mentioned, after the TEP, the CSAC will review the final recommendations, and then it will go on to the board. So I think the next slide is to open up for questions or comments.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question or make a comment, please press *1 on your telephone keypad.
And I'll also ask if Dr. Romano would like to make any additional comments.
Again, to ask a question or make a comment, press *1. You have no questions or comments at this time.
Okay, and I think I'm sure there'll be time at the end of this call if something does come up. You can ask at one of the next open periods. So, Ashley, you want me to move on to patient-reported outcomes?
Yes, Karen.
Okay. So I think some of you have been following or familiar with a project that NQF was involved in last year on patient-reported outcomes. And the final report has been approved by the CSAC and board and is posted. But I'll go through some of the, again, key points from that work and tell you what's coming next. So basically, this slide just tells you the goals and of the project, which was to identify key characteristics for selecting prompts, and I'll get into some terminology here in just a moment. Those are the patient-reported outcome measures that are used at the patient level, and PRO-PMs are the performance measures. And to identify any unique considerations for evaluating the PRO performance measures for NQF endorsement, and to lay out the pathway to move from these instruments to NQF-endorsed performance measures. We had two workshops with an expert panel, and we also had two commission papers on methodological issues. Next slide. So get into some definitions here. Patient-reported outcome is really at the conceptual level, it's a report of the status of a patient's health condition that comes directly from the patient without interpretation of the patient's response by a clinician or anyone else. The PRO domains included in this project encompass health-related quality of life, including functional status, symptom and symptom burden, experience with care, and health-related behaviors. So to kind of get back to one of the questions that came up earlier about experience with care, it's really not considered a type of measure. It's experience with care is kind of a topic area, and we are including them under PROs. You know, experience with care is kind of an unusual thing in and of itself, but under this project and with the guidance of the expert panel, it is included under our big area of patient-reported outcome. So this next slide, just really, again, to try to get us all on the same page with terminology of when we're talking about a PRO or the patient-level instrument or the performance measure. And this just gives two examples, and I'll just go through the one with depression. The PRO concept, in this case, is a symptom, one of the domains of a patient-reported outcome of depression. There's a PROM, an instrument or tool or single-item measure, and in this case, the example is the PHQ-9, which is the standardized tool to assess depression. And then the data from patient scores and the PHQ-9 have been used to develop a performance measure, or the PRO-PM. And in this case, we have a performance measure, which is the percentage of patients with a diagnosis of major depression or dyspnea and an initial pH score greater than 9 with a follow-up pH score, pH 9 score of less than 5. So, again, just to clarify, NQF doesn't endorse the PHQ-9 instrument all by itself. What NQF is interested in endorsing is a performance measure, and in the case of patient-reported outcomes, oftentimes the data for that performance measure will come from a specific instrument or scale. Okay, next slide. So after, you know, we had a 30-day comment period, and after comment period, there were a few things that the TEP really wanted to kind of, you know, clarify or emphasize. And the first is that PRO-PMs should be treated equally to other health outcome performance measures. And when I get to some of the recommendations, I'll explain that a little bit more because the panel really suggested that NQF consider some things that need to be considered in the broader context for all performance measures or all outcome measures. And in particular, that would be evidence that the outcome is responsive to an intervention and that performance measures focused on conducting an assessment, including administering a PROM, really are not of interest, but in some cases there may be a reason that you have to start with that type of a performance measure, and there are some suggestions for NQF to consider when those kinds of performance measures would be acceptable. And that has implications for things beyond a PROM. So the evidence suggestions and about performance measures focused on conducting an assessment have broader implications than just for ProPM. Next slide. So the TEP identified some guiding principles around this work, and certainly psychometric soundness was one of them. It's kind of a given that if you're going to be using a instrument or scale for a performance measure, that you have to start with one that has good psychometric soundness, reliability and validity of that particular instrument or scale. Person-centered kind of goes without saying when we're talking about patient-reported outcomes, but that's certainly a key guiding principle. And that, along with that, that the outcomes that are chosen to be measured should be meaningful to those who would be providing that information. Amenable to change was a big topic of conversation, and you know, of measuring things that the healthcare providers really can have some impact on. And this is one of those areas where it does have some broader implications besides just ProPMs. This is something that's come up in discussions about outcome measures in general. And then implementable, certainly there are some additional things to consider when you start talking about patient-reported data being used for performance measurement. Next slide. So I'm going to go through the recommendations that came out of the work that was done, the two workshops and the expert panel over the past year. And the first one is really before NQF gets involved, and that those developing ProPMs should follow the basic steps shown in the pathway. So one of the things that the group did was really lay out a pathway that goes from the concept of the patient-reported outcome through endorsement of a ProPM. Next slide. The next two slides are really just screenshots of that pathway. Won't get into all of the details here, but it starts with starting with the concept and just good measurement principles is to identify, first of all, identify the quality performance issue or problem, and identify outcomes that are meaningful to the target population, and determine whether patient or person reported information is even the best way to assess that particular outcome. Obviously not all performance measures need to be or should be based on patient-reported information. The next part of the pathway is really to work on the problem then. How do you measure that outcome in the target population? There's thousands of existing PROMs, many of them that were developed for use in research, and those certainly are worth looking at as a starting point and hopefully can be used for the purposes of collecting data for performance measurement. The pathway step six really talks about using the PROM in the real world with the intended target population and setting, to really gain some experience with using this in clinical practice, and then also to test the feasibility of and use of collecting that PROM data to develop and test the performance measure. Okay, and then we need to go back. Yeah. Then it goes on to the developing the performance measure. That the measure needs to be specified and then tested before it can be submitted to NQF. And so the last part of this pathway is where, you know, NQF involvement comes in terms of submitting that for endorsement, evaluating it, and, you know, then hopefully with the intent of it getting implemented and used and going through endorsement maintenance. Okay, next slide. So the next, the rest of the recommendations relate more specifically to NQF criteria and guidance for evaluating the measures. So the one, and this comes from the principle of person-reported information, is that the NQF criterion for importance to measure and report should require evidence that the target population values the measured PRO and finds it meaningful. So a lot of the discussion throughout the course of the project was that patients are not just the source of the information or the source of the data, but should be involved in identifying whether this is something meaningful to patients to begin with to work on performance measurements. The third recommendation is that NQF should consider adding a criterion or guidance related to evidence to require identification of the causal pathway linking the relevant structures, processes, interventions or service, and health outcomes. So this really is tied to the next recommendation, which is, again, that NQF should consider applying the existing criterion guidance regarding evidence for process performance measures to health outcome performance measures, meaning that, as you know, for process performance measures, the evidence criterion is what's the evidence that the process is linked to and hopefully leads to desired outcomes. So the discussions that came out of the PRO project was we should also be looking for that link between process and outcome for outcome performance measures. Is there evidence that there's at least one process, healthcare process, intervention service that can really affect that desired outcome? And the causal pathway is just really a diagram of what are those proposed linkages and then what is the evidence. So those are recommendations are purposely worded as NQF should consider because this is an area that has broader implications than just pro-PM and, you know, we can't require this for pro-PMs if it's not being required for other outcome measures. That's where there's quite a bit of comment about holding pro-PMs to a higher standard than other outcome measures. So this is really an area that's going to require additional consideration first by the CSAC, and then we'll see what comes out of that. So you all may want to make some comments on that when we get to the question and answer period. The fifth recommendation is, again, one that has broader implications, and so it's specifically worded as NQF should consider providing explicit guidance when a performance measure focused on collecting assessment data, including administering a PROM in this case, meets the exception for the evidence criterion and guidance for focusing outcomes or processes most proximal to desired outcomes. So, again, you're familiar with the guidance that we currently have that says CSAC prefers to endorse performance measures of processes that are proximal to desired outcomes. And when we start getting into performance measures based on, you know, assess, you know, draw a particular lab, do a particular lab test, or take the blood pressure versus, you know, what is the value of the lab test, what is the value of the blood pressure, or how are you providing treatment related to the answers on the lab test or the blood pressure. Those really aren't, you know, highly favorable and often have difficulty getting endorsement in you know, given all the other kinds of things where we can do performance measures. So the question is, at when should those be more acceptable? And can NQF provide more specific guidance? And again, this, you know, came up in the context of this work on pro-PMs and the PROMs. So, for example, you know, we don't really want a performance measure on, you know, did you administer the PHQ-9 to the appropriate patients? We like having the outcome performance measure that we talked about as an example earlier, but are there times when it's such a new area of measurement, for example, that we need to start at that level and, you know, what should be the conditions for that? So that's another area that needs further exploration and looking at the implications that it has beyond the patient-reported outcome measures. Okay, next slide. Okay, the sixth recommendation was that NQF should require measure specifications for pro-PMs that include all of the following. So, again, this is just recognizing that pro-PMs may have a few other requirements for specifications, for example, the specific PROM that's being used. So if the, you know, and as the example we saw, you know, that it was specifically identified as the PHQ-9, the there may be more than one type instrument to measure a PRO. We all know that there's more instruments to measure depression, but unless those are equated, it's very difficult to have a performance measure where some entities might be using the PHQ-9 and others may be using some other instrument. And so that needs to be specified, the methods for administering the PROM, any particular mode, you know, can it be administered in more than one way? So, for example, they can do it online by web or computer terminals in the clinic or automated telephone kind of administration. So all of that needs to be specified so that we can really end up with a standardized performance measure. Next slide. Recommendation seven is testing for pro-PMs. Should demonstrate the reliability of both the underlying PROM in the target population and the performance measure score. So, again, the focus, you have to start, if you're using an instrument, you have to start with one that's reliable and valid. And then certainly if you're talking about aggregating that data for a performance measure, we want to see that the reliability of that performance measure score is where the focus should be. And recommendation eight is similar in that testing for pro-PM should demonstrate the validity of both the underlying PROM and for the performance measure score. Okay. And the last two recommendations, Number 9 is that N2F should require analysis of missing data and response rates to demonstrate that potential problems in these areas do not bias the performance measure results. You know, when you're talking about patient-reported data, there is more likelihood of having missing data and problems with response rates that can certainly influence the performance measure results. And so it's important to look at that information under scientific acceptability. And then the last one is that feasibility should really consider the burden to both individuals providing PROM data and the providers whose performance is being measured. So generally, in most measures with feasibility, the concern is often about the entities being measured because they're the ones collecting the data, have to report the data, et cetera. In the case with ProPMs and PROM data, the patients also will be having some burden of, you know, filling out surveys or questionnaires, and you know, there may be some additional burden to the entities collecting that, and so those, you know, need to be considered under feasibility as well. Okay, next slide. Okay, so we can open it up here and get any of your comments or questions. As I said, the next step will really be for the for us to work with the CSAC on those areas where it really has broader implications than just the ProPMs, and talk about a path for resolving that, or looking at that in the context of our current evidence and testing requirements.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question or make a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. And you have a question from the line of Patrick Romana.
Hi, Patrick.
Hello again. So I'm not trying to belabor an earlier point, but I'm just trying to understand how patient experience or engagement measures fit here, because I would have thought that unlike the kinds of measures you've been talking about, patient-reported outcome measures, but we would generally regard patient experience or engagement measures as measures of the process of care. In other words, whether the providers provided appropriate attention to pain, to the patient's symptoms, whether the noise levels were properly controlled in the hospital so that patients could sleep, and so forth. So we would normally think of that as part of the process of care rather than the patient-reported outcomes. So I'm just trying to understand how those go together.
Right. Well, good question, and that is exactly the kind of push and pull of the discussions keeping them, or ultimately putting them in this area. I think some of it goes back to maybe even old terminology of when they were talking about more as patient satisfaction, and that patient satisfaction in and of itself, you know, some considered an outcome. But I think it's probably not a perfect fit, but the, you know, advice of the experts was that they were probably more similar to and have some of the same issues as the other types that I mentioned than dissimilarities. So, you know, the big difference would be, you know, obviously you don't probably have to think about risk adjustment for most experience with care measures, but you have a lot of the similar issues with the underlying instrument and how to aggregate that data into a performance measure. So I totally understand your question, and you know, it's kind of one of those things that it does. It's not a perfect fit, but that's where they ended up with it.
Your next question comes from the line of Rebecca Baranowski.
Hello, this is Sharon Hyvie. Yeah, this is Sharon Hyvie again. And may I, Patrick, I'm going to bounce off your question one more time, which is one of the slides that you had demonstrated, one of those, the criterion, and it basically outlined three types of patient engagement measures, and I'm trying to remember, I think one was process, which you were talking about, then intermediate outcomes, and then health outcomes, I think was the last one. So when we would be submitting measures, has the form been changed so that even though it's not such a perfect fit, then you would be detailing out which of the three areas that we would it would be under?
Right. So, you know, that's a good question. The next, you know, in addition to the CSAC needing to address these kind of broader policy issues, we need to, the next step in terms of actually implementing this is that we have to work on the measure submission form. So, we would definitely need to make sure that the submission form will work for whichever type it is. And but that, you know, right now we don't have a separate submission form for patient experience with care or patient reported outcome measures, but we definitely need that also in the next steps in terms of implementing any of these recommendations.
And may I ask another question, please?
Sure.
So similar to my question earlier about the adult/elderly project where and composites, I'm making the assumption about composites also, that they will be then put into every individual project as opposed to having, you know, separate projects. I assume patient engagement as well will then go to the condition-specific setting, cross-cutting, yada, 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 areas also. Is that correct?
Ashley, is that the plan?
Patient experience and engagement is already an existing review committee, so in that regard, it's covered regarding adult/elderly. Say, like I stated earlier, that the adult side of it is not explicitly called out, so those other measures can be captured in the cross-cutting areas of the taxonomy. And for composites, composite isn't an option for measure type. It isn't a review committee, rather, so those measures will be dispersed accordingly based on the topic areas of which they cover.
Okay. So what you're saying is that we do have a review committee for experience with care.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. So, okay. So you know what that I apologize.
Go ahead. That's okay. We also have a review committee for health status and functional
health and functional status.
Yeah. Right. However, we don't have separate review committees for symptom and symptom burden. So, you know, those would go with whatever topic area they were most relevant. So some of them may go in function. You know, so none of these topic areas are, again, black and white, but we do have those two review areas, so that will continue to exist at this point in time.
Okay, that's clear. Thank you. I think I thought earlier the way I interpreted some of the presentation is that the patient engagement project itself would not be was going to be dissolved and absorbed into the other projects itself. So my question was going to be, you know, for more of those overarching non-condition or project-specific measures, such like a CAPS type of measure that, you know, you couldn't necessarily attach to a condition, where would they go? So if the patient engagement project is being maintained, then it's an irrelevant question.
Oh, yes, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Jody DeVorton.
Hi, this is Mark Antman, Jody's colleague at the PCPI.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Karen. Karen, a question about the what you're saying about needing to document the reliability of prompts.
Yes.
For when you have when there is an existing or a prompt that has been in use for quite some time, such as the PHQ-9, can we assume that the documentation of reliability can be the documentation of reliability provided by the developer of the instrument, rather
yes.
than?
Okay, yes.
Okay. So it's not as if the developer of the ProPM needs to do some new reliability testing for the prompt.
That's right. And you know, of course, the caveat to that is if it's a prompt that was developed and tested in the target population that you're intending to use it in. So, you know, it has to still be relevant to your use. But, yes, we don't expect you to redo that, the instrument level reliability and validity.
Okay, that's helpful. Can I ask a quick follow-up question on the same PRO topic?
Sure.
Karen, you mentioned earlier that you reminded us all earlier that there were two papers commissioned by the NQF on this topic. Are those still available on the NQF website for reference?
Yes, they are. And there's if you go to the PRO project page, and I think I had the link on here when you get these slides, but there's a whole section that just says commissioned papers, and there's both of the commissioned papers are there. One is by David Sella and colleagues at Northwestern on the patient-level instruments. And the second one is by Ann Deitch and colleagues at RTI on performance measure level.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you.
Okay.
As a reminder, to ask a question or make a comment, press star one. You have no further questions.
Okay, well, thank you, everyone, for your time this afternoon. And like I stated earlier, we'll get the slides out to you for this webinar, and we look forward to speaking with you next month. Have a good afternoon.
Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude today's conference call. You may now disconnect.